When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Tyler Head, Wes Mitchell, and Chris Clark along with you on this Monday morning that we're calling Overreaction Monday after the spring game on Saturday night, where both Wes and Chris were on the call. And guys, listening back and pulling some of the highlights, I must say, I think you guys both did a pretty good job.
Oh, really? Okay, good. I was going to ask you if you got to listen.
He has to say that.
Yeah, I know.
He's not gonna come in here and be like, your actual guys, review. You were terrible.
We'll get your what actual are y'all talking about? The show?
No, I thought Wes was good perusing the sidelines. Chris kind of feeling into that color commentary role. I thought it sounded good.
Yeah, I did. I did. I loved Wes's sideline reports. I did. I enjoyed those because I was like, yeah, we got a little sideline insight. It's like, guys, I'm down here. Got this. It was fun. We had a good time with that.
The sideline is an entertaining place during a game. There's all kinds of stuff going on down there.
I imagine it's even more chaotic in a spring game when you're splitting both teams in half, essentially.
Well, so I kept having to tell people, I kept having to mouth, I can't talk right now. Can't talk to you. Because I didn't have a great way to mute myself down there. I was pretty much live at all times.
Oh, okay.
And so I saw people I knew down there, and they're like, what are you doing? I'm like, can't talk.
You should have made a sign.
Text me.
Yeah, you know text
so
me. I have
a t-shirt that says, it's a black t-shirt that says on air. I'll give it to you for next year's spring game. So people just know I'm always on air.
Well, yes. What was your main takeaway from being down there, though?
I
mean, you got like a different perspective than being up in the press box.
Yeah, the first time I was ever on a sideline for a game, and this kind of, it was reiterated to me, I guess, it's just how fast the game is down there. Mm-hmm. And obviously, if you know, we're around these guys a lot, but the first time you're really around them, compared to TV, when you're that close, you're just like, the guys are huge, and it's just like that whole thing of if you see a guy drop a pass on TV and people are like, oh, I could catch that. But throwing and catching a football in your backyard is not remotely like the velocity and the speed in which a football is being delivered. You know, and just the amount of grass basically that they can cover in a short period of time at 230 pounds is ridiculous. So that when you see it up close, it's just a little bit different vibe.
That's what stuck out to me when we were out at Pro Day a couple weeks ago. And yes, that's drills, and it's not necessarily an actual football game, but watching, you know, Rattler throw up close and personal, seeing Leggett make catches, seeing some of those guys run some of those drills, it really kind of stands out to you how freak of an athletes these guys really are to play at this level.
Yeah, and it just specifically for the spring game being down there, just the organized chaos of you've got position groups meeting with their coaches, and there's just constant feedback, and you know, guys are running on, guys are running off. It's really, I would say, incredible across football that the right personnel gets onto the field 99 out of 100 times, and that the guys get lined up, and that, because there's just so much, there's so little time. So if the defense comes off, you know, the D-line coach may have some feedback, the linebackers coach, and so it's just, there's constant coaching going on. And, you know, Shane Beamer's down there. He's doing an interview on SEC Network, getting yelled at by the defensive line.
For not counting sacks.
And trying to provide feedback as well, and trying to tell his guys, hurry up, I'm tired of seeing these procedural penalties as well. So I can't imagine what that was like, having all that going on. Obviously, it was a spring game, but I think the other thing I'll say, from my perspective down there, I'm siding with the quarterbacks on several non-sacks that Beamer was getting yelled at about. I'm pretty sure he made the right call, because 6'3", 240-pound Lenora Sellers was not going down by you throwing an arm out there.
Well, I was going to say, I think in the second half, once you got like Reno and Bevelin there, it did become like, all right, you get a hand on him, that counts as a sack, which to some degree I can get, but yeah, I think that may have overinflated the sack numbers a little bit, especially in the second half of the game.
My favorite one, though, was I believe it was Gilbert going straight up flag football, pulling the towel.
Yeah.
Of well,
Look, and he was
is that of Ashford?
Yeah. I think that was Bevel, maybe. Bevel or
no,
Ashford.
No, it was early.
Was it early?
It was early.
That's right, because he was unevaded on that one. He would have definitely gotten the sack.
And a great sack dance as well.
Preston Thorne is booing me.
Oh, no.
It says it's always a sack. You would say that.
I think Preston's a little biased.
Yeah, just a little. Yeah, but Sellers, man, you hear all offseason about this guy has a chance to be special. That was another thing, just watching him operate from down there and kind of being able to see the huddles up close. He really does carry himself more like a veteran, even after – so we were talking about it. It didn't really work out for us to get a lot of interviews down on the sideline, but they were going to give us a few student-athletes. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of like, all right, once you get into the second half, if the starters are sort of basically cut for the day, like they're done, they were even going to let us interview a few guys during the game. And for Sellers, I was like, you know, if I could talk to Sellers, that'd be really cool.
Sure.
Well, Sellers – even as a redshirt freshman, not your, quote, named quarterback yet, he was down there, headset on at all times, providing feedback to the younger quarterbacks from what I could tell, at least talking to the younger quarterbacks. I couldn't hear what he was saying. And just, you hear Dal call him a robot, and he's one of those guys, he doesn't have to yell. He doesn't have to scream to be a leader. Like, he just kind of carries himself with a quiet confidence. And, you know, I think you even listen to Beamer's comments. He was asked, like, hey, are you ready to name a starting quarterback? He passed on that. But, I mean, he was, what, offensive player of the spring?
The spring, yeah. That
with Sellers. So that Beamer said we can't read into that either. But
they can.
I am.
Sorry, Coach.
You didn't see anything from Sellers on Saturday night that made you say, oh, I don't know if he's going to be the guy or not. Everything that you saw was positive.
Yeah, I mean, that was a question that I asked going in and wrote about this. Is one of the storylines I thought going into the spring game. Again, we know that standard caveat is like there are some things you can't read too much into. But one of the questions was, given that we were going to see the other quarterbacks and we were going to see some actual scrimmage, you know, they were going to get some drives to put together, and they were going to have, you know, the mixed and match teams to where it wasn't going to be just, okay, Sellers has the entire first team, Robbie Ashford has the, you know, entirely the second team. It's going to be a mix and match, right? So my question was, will Sellers show that he's separated? I think we had heard some things throughout the spring that, you know, behind the scenes, you know, has he separated? I think so. But coming out of the game, I think we saw that. You know, now it was just, you know, a half of football, but we saw some themes throughout the night, one of them being like the quarterbacks are under duress, right? Sellers kind of neutralized that for the most part because he was able to maneuver in the pocket. He was able to get outside the pocket, keep his eyes downfield. Like, we saw a lot of the things from his bag of tricks, from his skill set, that show, I mean, this is why everybody's so excited about this kid. And so coming away from the game, I'd feel more convicted. You know, I was very confident going into the game, like this is going to be the guy, but even more so after watching it.
And we got to see something that we didn't really get to see him do a whole lot of season ago, and the limited amount of playing time that he got was kind of focused on that short game when it came to passing, that he didn't really uncork anything deep down the field. Nobody really did outside of one of Ashford's throws that I think was an overthrow. They focused more on the short game, finding the guys out in the flat, which, again, Sellers was very effective in doing, 9 of 11 for, 70 yards, I think, in the limited amount of time that he saw on Saturday. So that's an element of the game that, again, we didn't really get to see a season ago, but from what we saw on Saturday, looked very effective.
Yeah, that I thought it was a very vanilla game plan, as we thought it would be on offense, as Dal Loggins told us it would be. And the thing I liked about Sellers is you hear commentators and coaches talk about players keeping their eyes downfield when they're running or when they're escaping the pocket. I think he did a phenomenal job of that, and you could quite literally see him keeping his head up and looking downfield as he was making that decision, am I going to take off and run, or am I going to try to still make something happen through the air? And I think for him, just, you know, all the quarterbacks were under duress at times. I just thought he dealt with the pressure better than most of them, or all the other quarterbacks, I should say. And he doesn't really panic. Like that whole mindset we're talking about, that whole, you know, he's a robot, that's not just an off-the-field thing. Like, when you watch him operate, even when everything's flying around him, there's no panic, there's no, let me just, you see sometimes quarterbacks who are good athletes will take off too soon almost. And he did take off at times and showed you, I mean, he can extend plays. He had that one great run where he sort of tiptoed the sideline and stayed in bounds. That one was right in front of me. And so I think just that decision-making, that part of kind of knowing when to do that, like there will be at some point a game this year where he faces a great defense and he probably does have a learning moment where, you know, he maybe has a bad game and we're reminded he's a redshirt freshman. Like at some point that happens to every young player. However, based on what we saw on Saturday, this certainly seems like a kid who is not affected by the pressure, either in terms of like the literal pressure from a defensive front or just the pressure of having the spotlight on you and being the guy.
Yeah, he's just, and that's why I say so often, like, he's just got all the tools. You know, sometimes a young player comes in and you go, you know, like a Josiah Thompson's even a great example, because you can even point to something with him, and he plays a very difficult position as his quarterback, but left tackle is a very difficult position as a young player in the SEC. But Josiah Thompson, you can point to him and go, okay, he's going to have to get bigger and stronger, and that might be throughout year one. But he's got all the physical tools. With Sellers, what you can point to is he doesn't have a ton of game experience to speak of, either as a starter or just in general. Like, the collegiate experience in total just isn't there. He played, what, 4 games last year and wasn't the quarterback in big, meaningful moments, because that was Spencer Rattler. So there's going to be some experience there that, you know, you're going to have to overcome. You're going to have to learn on the fly. But he just, like, he checks all the boxes where there's not really like a weakness you could point to. You don't look at him and say, okay, well, he's going to have to get a little bigger. No, but like, he's got the size, he has the IQ, he's got the mentality, he can run, he can throw. Like, he's got all those things. And so I don't want to say this is a player where there's no questions, because there are, but they're mainly just, he just needs to go out there and play and get experience. He checks all the physical and frankly, all the mental boxes that you want to see as well.
And when you look at all the guys that were playing behind him, Ashford, as well as Reno and Bevel, you know, they all had their opportunities out there on Saturday. And you saw some flashes of things from each one of those guys, but I don't think you definitively looked at any of them and said, wow, this guy that's really going to give Sellers a run for his money. You see the athleticism with Ashford and his ability to run, but again, I don't think I saw anything that really told me that he was going to go up there and steal a job from Lenoris. Tyler Head, Wes Mitchell, and Chris Clark along with you on this overreaction Monday to what you saw on Saturday night at the spring game for South Carolina. Coach Beamer there, you know, saying that they are still not ready to name a starting quarterback as of yet. It is going to take a little bit of time. But again, what we saw from Lenoris Sellers on Saturday night certainly didn't give us any indication that it was not going to be his job at this point in time. Everything that we've heard through spring practice so far does definitely seem to back up the fact that he's still number one at this point.
What do y'all think those conversations with Lenoris Sellers and the quarterback group are like? I thought it was a little bit interesting, as opposed to talking about what we've heard before, which would be the pros and cons of naming someone now, naming someone later, or as opposed to saying, hey, we're not ready to name a starter, we're not going to do that. He pointed to, we're going to have conversations with all the guys in the next few days about where they stand within the mythical depth chart, is what I took it as, or at least where they stand within the program and their projection for their role this coming year. So, first of all, I think that also speaks to maybe if we're going to see some movement for South Carolina as far as guys entering the transfer portal, you could maybe see that, I would think, in the next 48 hours because of those sort of exit interview conversations, and those a lot of times would be your more – what I call healthy transfers, where maybe a guy is just being told, look, we love you as a person, but you're third or fourth string right now.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where things are. But I just thought it was a little bit interesting, a little bit fascinating that Beamer pointed to those conversations. And I wonder, does that mean internally that there's kind of a starting quarterback named in the next couple of days?
Yeah. You know, I'm not sure, I think would be my answer, just to be honest on it. You know, we got to remember, as you said, Wes, that kind of coincides and lines up with the quote-unquote exit interviews, you know, exiting spring. They're going to sit down with really everybody. I mean, Beamer talked about this recently. You've got basically days blocked because you got a lot of people on the team.
So they're roughly 4 hours into them right now?
Yeah, you're going to meet with every single person on the team and for a certain amount of time and say, hey, here's where we think stand. What do you think? And so it will be fascinating to see. I'm not going to act like I have the answer. I don't know. But I think just letting guys know where they stand. Here's what we like about what you've done so far. Here's what we want to continue working on. The thing that I'm pretty convicted of, to your question, Wes, is that internally, I certainly think this thing is more down the road and more advanced than what has been said publicly as far as where Sellers stands. Mm-hmm. You know, if they went out there and they played this weekend, I don't think there's much of like an internal, there wouldn't be this big debate in the building. All right, who are we going to start? I don't think there's that at all. I think it's more about how long do you continue the competition. And there's always, you know, the competition will continue, right? But in that you're going to continue giving Robbie Ashford reps and Davis Bevel and Dante Reno. But how long do you keep it going as far as, okay, who's our starter? Or do you go ahead and shut this thing down sometime in the summer? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think internally they have an idea. I'm curious as to internally, do the players know yet?
Yeah.
Like, will they know after these meetings, like, exactly where things are? Or is it still sort of, it's an open competition? You know what I mean? And like Beamer said, like, even if a starter is named at a position, you still have to compete for your job. That doesn't mean that you can just go out and not do things the right way. Not that Sellers would do this anyway, but if you don't continue to carry on the way you were, that it could change. But I think just in terms of giving the team direction and giving the guys direction, I wonder what those conversations are like. Obviously, those are internal. We'll never know, but I think it's a fascinating conversation. I also wonder who's third? Who's the third string quarterback? If we're assuming, I don't even want to say assuming, but if Sellers is one and we're assuming Ashford is two, who would be three at this time?
Well, I don't think we could certainly take anything away from Saturday night. I think Bevel was, you know, paired up with an offensive line that really was not able to protect him. So I think he got sacked more than any of the other quarterbacks. But, you know, saw some good things from Reno. Was obviously able to lead that touchdown drive, you know, to get Garnett their last score of the game. But he also threw the interception too. So kind of good and bad on both ends. Bevel obviously has more starting experience more college football experience in general than a guy like Reno has. But again, Reno is the guy that you're thinking be your future a couple years down the line. So maybe he's somebody you want to be as your three. But I think that's even an even tougher question at this point in time.
And yep. Where is Luke Doty in there?
Yeah.
Is he in there?
That's
well,
what I was going to say.
Did play on Saturday, at quarterback at least.
I think you lean toward experience, you know, with questions like this. And, you know, if you had not brought in Robbie Ashford, I think you'd be sitting here going, Sellers is QB1, and then, hey, yeah, we're, you know, that might have even changed the entire equation. Luke Doty might be in the quarterback room full time.
I think he would have to be.
He would have to be. But you did bring in Ashford, and so it's kind of like if you got to number three in a game situation where you're sitting there going, all right, it's Bevel or Reno or something else, you know, you might be inclined to say, well, Luke Doty's been around here the longest, and he's played. He's probably played more than Davis Bevel in total, right? Like,
yeah,
just in terms of his career.
I think so, because Bevel only had the one start and came in some mop-up duty at Oklahoma, but outside of that, a whole lot.
You know, and ideally – well, of, you know, if you got there wouldn't be anything ideal about that situation because that means you would have, you know, for some reason would have lost your first two quarterbacks. But if you were there, you would hope it had not happened in the same game, so you would have some time to pivot and say, okay, Luke, you know, we're going to get you up to speed.
Doty is your, in case of emergency, break glass quarterback, essentially, is what you're saying.
You know, it wouldn't shock me if they went that route in that scenario.
think that's actually a nice little luxury to have.
Yeah.
You know, you got a guy who is willing to do anything for the team. Primarily has focused at wide receiver, but if it came to it, and like you said, nobody is looking at that scenario as being ideal, but it's not that far-fetched. It has happened before.
It's not the Kentucky playing, you know, the wide receiver who actually did a good job for them.
He ended up sparking them.
He sparked them.
Didn't they run for like 200 yards or something in that game? Didn't they have like a buck 50 or something?
They did. I mean, that was kind of an extreme.
Terry Bowden, is that his name?
Lynn Bowden.
Lynn Bowden, yeah.
Yeah.
You're the Terry Bowden and Lynn Bowden. Terry Bowden. Kind of combination.
I combine them together.
I believe, debuted. That was a game that was their Muschamp era. South Carolina won that game, and I think they went to Bowden in the middle of that game, and then he just started the rest of the way.
I'm glad they didn't do that earlier in the game.
Really?
Yeah, it wouldn't be that extreme, you know, or that far-fetched, like y'all said. That's another little kind of interesting subplot, and I think there's more of a question of that to me than who the starter is going to end up being, because, again, I think as long as nothing dramatically shifts, I think we all kind of see the direction this thing's going.
Reno goes shotgun on first down and 5. It's a give up, and they're going nowhere. Oh, my goodness. Coming through, blowing it up in the backfield. I mean, that play just eaten alive by Dylan Stewart, the freshman, minus 4 on the carry.
He almost took the snap there, or took the handoff.
I thought he was in the huddle.
Yeah, look, he's smiling there, too. Yeah, that was very impressive. And we've called his name more than once tonight. He is so good at that move right there, knifing inside, beating Sidney Fugar, and just...
Welcome back in. It's the Gamecock Central Takeover Hour presented by Firehouse Subs.
I think I blacked out. I didn't even realize I did that noise.
Immaculate breakdown of that play there. Dylan Stewart getting the tackle for loss on Saturday night. You guys are both, like I said, I think you did a great job.
Chris, I won't take any credit. Chris was like, I never even really wanted to be an analyst or anything. John Madden over here, like I was waiting on him to pull out a telestrator and start drawing circles.
That would have been fun. Well, next year we'll take the show on the road with the live stream.
Absolutely.
Our friends at Integrated Media. Come, now, you know, put it in the press box.
If you're going to do John Madden, you got to point out the obvious, though. All right, you see, he took him to the ground. That means the play's over because he tackled him.
And love Brett Favre.
Well, Lenore Sellers could be your Brett Favre, I guess.
Yeah.
Draw little hearts around him on the telestrator. All right, we've gotten too far off task.
What is the one? Oh God, what was it? One forearm equals 2 feet, or it was like
the Madden math.
Yeah. No, Chris did great.
Yeah, no, you guys both did great. But Chris giving a good breakdown right there of Dylan Stewart, who had a huge impact on Saturday night, had a sack, had a couple tackles for losses as well. Just really able to explode off that defensive line, which is what you hope to see from everything that we heard and what you guys were able to see out in spring practice over the past couple weeks. All indications is this guy lived up to the billing, and we saw that again on Saturday night.
Boys, I don't want to be spring game guy. I really don't. But I'm about to be. I thought Lenore Sellers would be the story of the game. And in a way, he was. But looking back, Dylan Stewart may have been the story of the game. Like, this guy, like, he was listed with 3 tackles all for loss. And like you said, Tyler, a sack. It felt like he had 4 sacks. Like, it felt like when he was in there, his presence was being felt. And, you know, that was after that almost clowny-looking play where he saw that opening and...
almost took the hand off.
Yeah, his suddenness and his movements for a guy that looks the way he looks. Like, South Carolina has not, we're not going to compare him to Clowney because that's not fair to anybody, but South Carolina has not had a freshman pass rusher with that just natural God-given ability in, I would say, a long time.
Since Clowney? Yeah.
Maybe. And, I mean, he looks physically put together for a freshman. And then, Chris, he's out there chasing down perimeter screens, hitting guys, too. So there's some hustle. There's some there's some motor to this kid, too, on top of the natural gifts. You remember Charles Power? He basically told us, look, in terms of just natural ability, he may have been the best prospect in the class of 2024. There was just, I think, the motor and kind of consistency were a couple of things he wanted to see, but I saw no questions about the motor on Saturday night at Williams-Brice Stadium.
Yeah, if Lenora Sellers is kind of the how you would draw up the quarterback in the lab, Dylan Stewart is that for an edge rushing prospect. If you've got a guy, you know, that you can draw up, okay, let's make him 6'5", 250, can run like 4'5", and that's what it would look like. And the thing that's impressive about him is he does something, he has something that's just, like you said, Wes, God-given ability that I think is rare in a freshman, in that he can just, he can go speed to power instantly. Like, you saw it. He can, it's not just, oh, man, he looks good as a pass rusher. Like, he's got a, you know, there are a lot of guys that, not a lot of guys that look like him, but there are some guys that look like him that are going to play major conference football, who have a, who they can run in a straight line. They look great getting off the bus. They have a good first step. But he has, he can put all those things together, and he's done it very quickly. You know, yeah, he looks good rushing the passer, but a lot of the plays that he made, including the one that you just played as we join back here, that was against the run. You know, he can, he's just so quick, so sudden. That's a good term, Wes. And he's so powerful already. But you remember when Clowney was here and they measured, again, not a Clowney comparison per se, but you remember they had that machine where you could basically hit it with your hands, and Clowney's power was so far above anybody else. You know, I would love to,
like,
put
broke
Stewart.
The machine.
Yeah, I would love to put Stewart on that thing, because he just has, he'll keep getting stronger and all those things, but just he plays with violence, and then you add those to, you add that trait to, you know, just a big, fast, quick, twitchy guy, it's a dangerous combo.
And he wasn't the only effective guy coming off the edge there. He also had a good night from Brian Thomas Jr. Gilbert Edmond got some sacks in there as well. So the edge room as a whole just looked collectively better from what we saw on Saturday.
Yeah, the crazy thing is I was sitting here going through the guys in my head, and I'm glad you brought up Brian Thomas Jr. He had a great day, and I was thinking about, man, Gilbert Edmond looked good. Kyle Kennard, kind of a quiet day, but we've heard great things about him all spring.
He made a couple of plays as well.
But, dude, looks the part. I mean, my goodness. Dez, to me, you can tell, has added, they talked about how he's added some muscle, added some strength, added some weight. He looked like he has. He's drawn up kind of the way you want an edge rusher to be. And then, like you said, Brian Thomas, he's never going to necessarily win the measurables award, which I think gives him, in some people's eyes, they maybe limit his upside, and maybe that's fair, but he was all over the field as well. So I think, man, those guys on defense, after kind of having that month where they really struggled last year, it shows you how quickly it can kind of turn. They had a strong finish with the 3-3-5, and they've got to be looking at this defensive line and this linebacker group. And you can see why we've heard basically that in the building – they feel really, really good about this front six. And I think we all saw that on display. And even go down to, like, the interior defensive line as well. A guy who we may hear from relatively soon, Monquel Goodwine.
It's the rumor.
Dude, he comes in. I don't know that I necessarily had super high expectations for him, because he just hadn't played much at Alabama. And you're like, we don't really know what he can do. Let's be fair about this. And I thought he was right in there making plays, just like the other veterans South Carolina has on Saturday night.
Well, you look up, I mean, this is a guy that was a top 70 prospect in the country, and Nick Saban looked at him and went, I want that guy. You know, so there's some talent there. But I think that speaks to your point. You look up in the fourth quarter, and, you know, we always make the jokes about how Brad Lawing would have long snappers playing defensive tackle by the end of the game and those types of things. You look up second half, and – you still got DeAndre Jules, a graduate, who is probably going to play in the NFL, and Monquel Goodwine out there playing. You know, you've got late in the game, you've already cycled through, you know, Debo Williams, Bam Scott, your two senior transfer linebackers, and now you've got Wendell Gregory and J.R. Johnson, two four-star freshmen out there.
A lot of people concerned about what they saw out of the offensive line, but I thought Chris did a really good job, because it'd be kind of hard with the spring game, watching in person or watching it on TV, to know exactly who's who at what spots at the course of a game, because they're not exactly giving you the starting lineups. To start the game, block for the New Orleans Sailors, we had Josiah Thompson, Kamar Bell, Rashawn Lee, Torsilly Simpkins, and Kaysen Henry on the offensive line. And as you pointed out on Gamecock Central, that's maybe two, maybe three starters right there. So you're not even having your true one unit working together. And then you continue to change that as the game goes along through the different variations. So, again, was it a great day for the offensive line? It was not. But I don't think it's something to necessarily freak out as much about right now, because they're still a work in progress.
They are. And I think that's the position ultimately. We've talked about this a ton, y'all. You want those five that you can figure out, all right, here are our five, and here's where we're slotting them at. At some point, you want to let them go gel together with the guys beside them, right? And I think as much as we've talked about the D-line depth, that was on display. So obviously when you're playing against yourself, if the D-line's having a good day, then what does that mean for the O-line? And like Chris said, you're getting down to like your third team line at times, and it's a guy who's played a ton of ball against a walk-on or something in third or fourth quarter, and so that's not really a fair matchup. And I'll say this, I'm not going to go the route of telling the fans they can't, oh, you cannot be concerned about the offensive line.
For sure.
From what we saw last year, and again, injury is a huge part of that, granted, if you want to be concerned about the O-line after that game, I get it. I understand. I also don't think, I think especially it goes back to when you have a young team and you're still trying to get everything together on offense against a veteran defense, you're probably not going to have a great spring offensively. You're not going to have a great spring up front. And all that really matters is, can they find a way to figure out their five and let them start working together and gelling together for real opponents in a few months? And you may be sitting at home saying, well, I don't believe they can do that. And that's fair. That's fine. But I don't know that you take a ton away. I don't feel like I see O-lines having dominant performances in many games, but certainly not in spring games.
Yeah, it's hard to be dominant on the O-line nowadays in general. Now, obviously, goes without saying, you got to be way better than you were last season. And Even watching on Saturday night, I didn't see anything that led me to believe, okay, they can't be better than last season or they won't be, because I just don't – there wasn't enough there to have that takeaway. If we get into – say play Old Dominion game one and you've got – you're healthy from top to bottom. You got your full complement of running backs, Rocket Sanders included. You've got your starting five at that point on the offensive line. You've got Lenora Sellers out there. And if they go out there and they have 30 rushes for 80 yards against Old Dominion, we can come on here the following Monday and we'll play a literal alarm over the microphones.
We'll take everybody to group therapy.
Yeah. And because that would be very concerning, yeah, right? It kind of like last year. You played North Carolina. It was a question, right?
Sure.
Remember we went in? All right, well, offensive tackle, I don't know. What do you think? Question was answered immediately. 9 sacks.
Well, and you started off that game with Kaysen Henry getting hurt, and that obviously, well, you can even go back further to Jalen Nichols getting hurt. In last year's spring game, the dominoes just kept falling from there.
There were already questions, and then you lost the two guys who were going to be your starters there before the season, and then play 4 or 5. So that just compounded the issue. So, you know, I hate to say it's a wait and see, but, man, it really is to some degree. And I think they can be better than last year. I'm not projecting, oh, this will be a top three offensive line in the SEC, but you need to be better. You need to have more stability there.
Can they get Marquis Anderson fully 100% healthy back to who he was?
That'd be good.
Is Josiah Thompson ready to be a starter in the SEC? That's a lot as a true freshman.
Right.
But that would open up some other things for you. That would potentially move Tree to guard. It seems like Kaysen Henry has quietly kind of locked down right tackle, at least as much as you can lock down a position in the spring. Now, Torricelli Simpkins, we saw him get to start at guard. Obviously, you're split between two teams. But is that the way to get him on the field? Like, did he have a good enough spring? That was a name that popped up quite a bit. We know Vershawn Lee's probably going to be on the field.
Yep.
So did Simpkins do enough that they're saying, hey, we want this guy on the field? So I think you've got more options, certainly if you can stay relatively healthy. You've got way more options than they had last year. It's just a matter of putting all the pieces together.
Yeah, purely from a body in the room standpoint, what I think 15 guys on scholarship on the offensive line split between all the positions. So you have the numbers. Again, can you stay healthy and can you find that right combination of the starting five prior to the season and just have them play together on a week in, week out basis? Because that was the biggest thing last year. It took till what, the Vanderbilt game to finally get a consistent starting five on the offensive line?
Yeah, and even then, it was, you know, you still had injuries late in the year going into. You know, they finally sort of found something, and Trey Jones got hurt. Then Cason Henry was back, but he got hurt. You know, it was – even the guys that didn't have those, like, season-ending injuries, you had stuff pop up at all times. Vershawn Lee got hurt after moving over to right tackle and playing very, very well. So it was not ideal at all. And I do think not only do you have the numbers, but I feel like they are among those numbers – there are more guys that look like they could contribute this year, maybe compared to last year.